This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. President Trump has dismissed climate science and raised the specter of officially revisiting the thoroughly debunked link between vaccines and autism. Tech-heavy issues like net neutrality and renewable energy are also on his docket, of course. And yet, so far, the president has not named a science advisor. Later this hour, President Obama's top science advisor weighs in on that situation and the many scientific challenges facing our nation. But first, recent weather here in New England has made it abundantly clear that it's the middle of winter. We don't need Punxsutawney Phil to tell us that. But at the North Pole, things are not nearly as cold and icy as they should be. Temperatures last week spiked to some 50 degrees above normal. And it's actually the third time that's happened since November. So perhaps it's no surprise that the amount of sea ice in the Arctic has been at record low levels for the past 3 months. And it's not just the Arctic. Globally, sea ice is at an all-time low. So, what are we to think? Ted Maxim is an assistant scientist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. He's a sea ice physicist who works at both poles. Ted, welcome to Living Lab.
Thanks for having me.
All right, ice cover in the Arctic at a record low for this time of year. I mean, hitting record lows during the summer, unfortunately, has become almost routine, but this is winter, so what's going on right now?
Well, it's in one respect, it's not too surprising. If you have low sea ice in the summer, you typically have low sea ice in the winter as well. We've been seeing long-term trends in sea ice decline over the past several decades. But this year is really unusual in that the sea ice initially started to recover a little bit in September, as it does every year.
I mean, yeah, there's always going to be this waxing and waning kind of, but it should be growing in the fall.
Right. That's an important thing to point out is sea ice isn't sort of a constant thing in the Arctic. It waxes and wanes with the seasons, just like our snow cover does here. Except at the end of summer, there's usually an area about the size of the U.S. left. At least there has been typically. So this year we had quite a low sea ice extent in the summer, not a record low, but pretty close. And then it started to increase quite rapidly. And that's because the open water there had only been ice-free for a very short time. So it's very cold. It's very easy to refreeze. But then it sort of stalled in October, late October and November, and has been advancing very slowly for quite some time.
So it's not so much a matter of melting and retreating. It's just not growing as much as it normally would during the winter.
Right. It's not growing. I mean, sometimes it moves north a little bit or moves south a little bit with winds, depending on which way they're blowing. Because sea ice, unlike a glacier, moves around on the surface of the ocean. So what's been happening in the Arctic over the past several months is there's been a lot of warm air masses and strong winds blowing to the north in through sort of the Bering Strait area in Alaska and up through what we call Fram Strait between Greenland and Iceland. And that brings warm air, which obviously warm air, it's hard to freeze ice, but also the winds push the ice to the north. So it hasn't been advancing as quickly as it has normally.
And when you say warm air, I mean, last week, this spike in temperatures, 50 to 60 degrees above normal, meant that temperatures at the North Pole were expected to be right around the freezing point, which, of course, take that the other way. And that's right around the melting point for ice, even in February.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's very unusual. I mean, it's not completely unheard of to have very warm spells in the Arctic every once in a while. Storms do occasionally intrude. But what's been happening this year and to a certain extent in the past few years has been somewhat unusual. You're seeing what we think is more storms entering the Arctic, and certainly this year.
I mean, a study last year found that these kinds of warm pulses would normally happen like once or twice a decade, and we're talking about three times since November. Is this just a crazy one-off warm year, or does this to you seem like it's more a part of a trend in this direction?
It's probably a combination of both. I mean, why this year is particularly unusual, and we should clarify how unusual it is in the autumn when you expect the ice to advance. It's been a record low far beyond anything we expect. About 2 million square kilometers of ice has been missing, essentially, which is, you know, about the area of Alaska and Texas combined, I think. So what's been happening is this year is normally you have a high pressure centered over the Arctic. And this year it's been anomalously low. And that's allowed these warm winds to come in through, like I said, both through the North Atlantic and both through the North Pacific. And that happens once in a while. We see that high pressure breakdown fairly often, but this has been very unusual and very persistent for the past several months.
Let's talk about why that actually matters. I mean, we've all seen, you know, the pictures of the sad polar bear on the single piece of floating ice or swimming right. around looking for ice. Obviously, there are some species that depend very heavily on the ice in the Arctic. Are there broader ecosystem effects and broader, you know, impacts for the globe if we start losing sea ice on this scale?
Yeah, potentially. Some of them maybe not necessarily bad. There's another scientist here at Woods Hole, Bob Picard, who's been working with colleagues looking at spring blooms of phytoplankton in the Arctic. And he's been going up the past couple of years and noticing sort of much more extensive blooms beneath the ice than perhaps was expected. So if you remove more ice in the summer, more sunlight can get into the water. And that's great for phytoplankton. What that means for the ecosystem on down is not quite clear. There are some species, obviously, like seals and polar bears you mentioned, that depend on the ice. And so as the ice retreats further and further each summer and takes longer to get to shore, the polar bears can get stranded along shore and not be able to access their feeding grounds. As far as impacts farther afield, like what's happening here in Woods Hole, we've all heard about the polar vortex,
of course,
a few years ago. Yeah, and so this
we couldn't talk about anything else for a few months.
So this is an interesting area, somewhat controversial. The connections aren't quite clear yet, but it's looking more and more like there may be a connection between what's happening at the North Pole and what's been happening at lower latitudes, like where we are, and that's because normally, if the Arctic is very cold and it's warmer here, there's a very strong temperature contrast between the pole and here. That creates a very strong wind circling around the North Pole, which sort of isolates that cold air mass from us. Now, when you have a situation like what's going on now, where you have a very warm North Pole, that kind of breaks down. It's a lot easier for warm air masses to go up to the Arctic and then cold air masses to break down south. So there's a possible connection between sea ice loss and increased cold air masses coming far south, but also maybe more storminess in the winter as well.
Well, and we know that the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the globe.
Right.
And, of course, that's going to affect how much ice melts or how much ice forms.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a feedback there, right? I mean, the more ice we lose, the more warming we get it. It just
exactly.
Kind of
yeah.
Itself.
Yeah. This is something we in the business call the ice albedo effect or polar amplification. It's long been predicted that the North Pole would warm faster. So this than the rest of the globe. And this is, you know, one of those sort of fingerprints of climate change that we expect to see. So what happens when you remove ice that's covering the ocean? The ice is kind of like a blanket that insulates the ocean from the atmosphere. You take that away, the first thing you can do is you can pump more solar radiation into the ocean in the summer. So that heats up the ocean more. So the ocean gets warmer. And then in winter, now you have to freeze so much more ice to get the ice back to where it was, that releases a lot of heat to the atmosphere. So actually the atmosphere warms up. So the atmosphere warms up, it retards the ice growth. And when it retreats, you get more solar radiation in, which melts more ice. So you have this sort of knock-on effect. A little bit of melting leads to more melting, and that more melting leads to more warming. So you see the Arctic warm up much faster than the globe.
I mean, given that, and you said that typically we've had, during the summer, an area about the size of the U.S. left. Is that right, in terms of ice?
Yeah, about the size of the continental U.S.
And then in a year like this year, we've essentially lost something the size of Texas and Alaska. So you do that a few years in a row, and you don't
right.
have any ice. I mean, how much longer before we have an ice-free Arctic?
Well, we're actually, you know, the area of Texas and Alaska, that's what we're missing now, I think, at this point in the winter, which is well below normal for this time of year. Because in the winter, we don't see the declines we see in the summer. In the summer, we're seeing, if you think of the continental U.S., what we're seeing at the end of the summer is sort of everything east of the Mississippi plus a couple extra states have disappeared. So essentially half of the U.S.
I mean, at that rate, how much longer before we have an ice-free Arctic?
That's a really good question. And this is something where climate models don't quite get it right, but not right in a way that won't make climate skeptics happy. It's actually
meaning that they
meaning the ice is declining much faster than climate models predict.
Wow.
We're learning a bit about why, and so improving those models, and they're getting closer. But climate models were predicting perhaps it would be an ice-free summer in, say, 2070, 2080, something like that. And by ice-free, I mean there's going to be little bits hanging around. It's hard to melt all of it, some of it around Greenland, perhaps, but not very much. Now it looks like we might lose all the ice in summer, perhaps by around 2040, 2050, something like that. So,
and already there's
in my lifetime, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, that's scary enough, and already we're at the point where there's starting to be shipping traffic. You know, the Northwest Passage, the fabled Northwest Passage, is no longer a fable or a myth. It's an actuality sometimes.
Right. Yeah. When the Northwest Passage was first sailed, it took Roald Amundsen a couple of years to get through. He got frozen in the Canadian archipelago, had to winter over. And now, you know, regular sailboats can sometimes traverse the Northwest Passage. And you have liquid natural gas tankers in the Arctic going across the Arctic in the winter, across the Russian Arctic. And of course, we've seen in the past few years, there's an interest in oil and gas exploration in the area north of Alaska offshore. So you can look at that as a potential benefit. We have more access to the Arctic, a shorter route from Asia to Europe. But there are risks. You know, remember what happened with Deepwater Horizon. What happens if something like that happens in the Arctic? That's going to be much, much more difficult to clean up, because if it takes a little while to stop a wellhead blowout or clean up the oil, then the ice comes back, and that the oil freezes into the ice and moves all around the Arctic. So the consequences are pretty daunting.
Now let's switch to the other end of the planet, and Antarctica also at a record low for sea ice right now. Which, I mean, it's summer there. So on one hand, you might say, oh, well, it's summer, you know, but there's actually been an opposite trend in Antarctica where we've been seeing thicker sea ice. So what on earth is going on?
Right. And that's something that has given a bit of solace to climate skeptics. When we talk about how all the ice is disappearing in the Arctic, they go, well, the Antarctic has actually been increasing a little bit. And that's true. It has. And so that's been an area of active research, trying to figure out exactly why. Because, again, the climate models here predicted a slight decline, not very much. And actually, if you look at how they behave, it's probably not outside of what we would expect from natural variability. Things like El Nino can affect ice in the Southern Ocean because it's much, much closer to the Pacific. Influence of things going on in the Pacific. And so that can cause increases or decreases, you know, on a decadal time scale. So it's not too surprising that it increased a little bit. But we didn't really know, we still don't know completely why. There's a complex connection between El Nino, possibly some long-term changes in what's going on in the ocean in the Atlantic, changes in the winds around the Antarctic, and probably a little bit of anthropogenic or human influence. Both CO2 and ozone depletion act in the Antarctic in actually kind of curious ways. Ozone is one of the ones that's a really hot topic right now, in that it possibly actually leads to an increase in sea ice over the short term, but then over the long term, we expect to see a change in what's going on in the ocean, releasing heat and melting that sea ice back. So the Antarctic is actually a much more complex system than the Arctic and very difficult to predict.
Well, and you're talking about with the sea ice and the things that affect it, it's a more complex system, but it's also more complex because in addition to the sea ice, you've got these huge land-based glaciers, and then they start protruding out over the ocean. You get floating ice shelves, and then you've got the sea ice.
Right.
Is how much interplay is there between those different kinds of ice? I mean, is it possible that just as ice shelves are breaking down and we're seeing, you know, like right now there's the fourth largest ice sheet has a crack forming across it, looking at potentially, in the fairly near future, that breaking off. Could the increase in sea ice be something as simple as like ice shelves are breaking off and becoming sea ice?
That actually was one of the ideas, was that more of this land ice is being dumped into the ocean. And when it melts, it makes the ocean fresher. And fresher water sits at the top of the ocean and insulates the surface from deep water. And actually, in the Antarctic, it's a kind of an unusual situation. And the deeper water is warm because that's water that forms at more lower latitudes in the tropics and moves down. And it sits under that fresh water on the top. So you put more ice, like putting ice cubes into your drink, and it melts and sits at the top. It's easier to form sea ice. Now, the only problem with that theory is the places where sea ice is increasing and where it's decreasing are in the opposite places than you'd expect.
It's never simple, is it?
So that may be contributing, but what's more likely is it's just changes in winds. In the Antarctic, because the sea ice is so exposed to the open ocean, unlike in the Arctic, the winds move it around very easily. So if you change the winds, and if they come from the south instead of the north, then you're going to push ice to the north and you have an increase in ice extent. And that's what we're seeing in places like the Ross Sea, which is south of New Zealand. It's been increasing because the winds have been coming from the south and blowing it out. And over below Chile, near the Antarctic Peninsula, the opposite is happening. Winds are blowing from the north and decreasing sea ice there. So you have this sort of push and pull of sea ice. So it's not too surprising that it might increase one year and decrease the next. This year is pretty weird, though.
Well, plenty of complexities for you to continue figuring out. Ted Maxim is a sea ice physicist at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution. And Ted, I know you're in the midst of packing for an expedition to the Antarctic later this spring. So thanks for taking the time to come in and talk with us.
You're welcome.
Up next, what President Obama's science advisor sees as the nation's biggest science challenges and where he turns to get trustworthy news and information. That's when Living Lab continues after a short break.